I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not a huge fan of the term new normal. What we're seeing today in our lives is anything but normal. And that disruption will be most significant for those expecting to attend college this fall.
The collegiate experiences will be different in the life of COVID. There's no getting around that until we have a vaccine, or the numbers sort of indicate that herd immunity will allow us to relax social distancing guidelines.
What can we expect on local college campuses this fall as we protect against coronavirus?
It sounds excessive to think that we would have to test every day, but ideally, that would, I think, be a good practice to test every day. It may not be practical, but at this point, I think at least a couple of times each week.
In this edition of 880 In Depth, our conversations with the presidents of two universities in northern New Jersey, one public, one private, on college in the face of the COVID-19 threat. I'm Tim Scheld from WCBS News Radio 880. We're beginning to hear our local officials talk about the issue of school in the coming months. In fact, colleges and universities are waiting to hear from these officials as to what these states will be requiring of them as they hope to open up in the fall. As we wait, we wanted to hear the view from the inside. I spoke to the president of Fairleigh Dickinson University, Dr. Christopher Capuano. One of his school's campuses is right on the edge of the epicenter in the state, in Teaneck and Hackensack. But first, our Peter Haskell got on the phone with the president of William Patterson University. That's a school tucked up along the Bergen-Passaic border in the northern part of the state. Meet Richard Heldobler. He's had 30 years of experience in education, but it's hard to think that anything could have prepared him for this. We asked him about how he sees the coming year.
Do you have any sense what it's going to look like next fall?
My best guess at this point, and it is a guess without further guidance from the state, is that it will be somewhere in the middle, that there will be traditional fall experiences coupled with social distancing requirements regarding residence halls, classroom spaces, dining obligations, and we're waiting to see, you know, what those will look like with guidance from the state.
Give us a sense at this point what a hybrid experience might be like.
So a hybrid experience might be where you have where you live stream the class. So there's a camera in the class that the faculty member can turn on, and they're teaching in front of a camera just as if they would be teaching a traditional class. Half of the class might be looking at might be viewing it through a computer at home, and half the class might be in the physical classroom space, and then on an alternate day you would flip those populations. Also, part of it might be another hybrid model is where they, for a three-hour class, they would do 1.5 in the classroom setting, and they might do 1.5 hours online, depending on how the construct is set up. So there's that model. Other models are you would compress your class schedule. So you can put, let's say, a class with 20 students in a class that would normally fit 50, which would allow for a physical distancing within a classroom. So those are some of the models that nationally are really being talked about in terms of thinking about social distancing in traditional class settings.
When you look at the physical spaces, the lecture halls, the smaller rooms, how easy or difficult is that going to be?
It's complex. There's no getting around that. It's complex. We have more popular times of the day that faculty and students prefer to be on campus, and that might have to be altered. They may have to be more spread out throughout the day to make sure that we have a large enough footprint and space utilization to make sure that we can maintain social distancing. But you know, I think that we'll definitely be able to you know, accommodate those in one way or another. It also might involve moving to some Saturday classes, which is an underutilized day on campuses, or Sunday. But I think ultimately part of the conversation that we'll be having with students is, you know, would you prefer to do a hybrid where you're only in face-to-face one day and viewing a stream the other day, or would you prefer to come on a Saturday or Sunday when we can give you a bigger space and you can be in face-to-face? So I think some of those conversations that, you know, we'll be having with our continuing students over the summer with focus groups to sort of figure out what the best way is going forward. Again, once the state gives us some guidance.
How do you get faculty members to buy into coming in Saturday or Sunday?
Well, I mean, that's a challenge. You know, we are a collective bargaining environment. And so I always say the good news about collective bargaining is the rules are spelled out. The bad news is the rules are spelled out. And classroom assignment is an assignment, right? So the university does have the ability to direct the workforce. Is it preferred? No. But I have to say that the faculty at William Patterson have been really good partners, both in the pivot to the online in the spring and helping us think through what fall might look like coming forward. And you know, really, we've just begun the discussions about partnering on our budget challenge. And they're good partners, and they care about the students. And, you know, I don't think they would want this to be a long-term solution, but I think in the immediate aftermath of the pandemic, it is something that they would consider.
The fact that many of your students don't live on campus and commute, does that make it easier or harder for you?
Well, I think it makes it easier in the fact that you're not dealing with a large residence population in the residence halls. You know, people can park in the parking lot, and moving to and from classes allows you to, you know, create social distancing. It's really, you know, managing the in-class experience that would be difficult. I think there is an added layer that you don't know what they're doing off campus, where if you had a larger residence-like component on campus, there you can sort of control the environment and control the social distancing and control the context. I think that the commuter population gives you the challenge of you can't control that aspect of it. So it will involve some sort of idea around testing, and you know, if you're running a fever or you're not feeling well, don't come in, and making sure that we have academic policies in place that allow for that kind of leniency going forward. And we're working with our Health and Wellness Center to begin to think about what those guidelines would look like in the fall.
For the students who would live in dorms, who do live in dorms, how do you control that, and can you maintain social distancing?
Well, it would depend on the living space and the configuration of the residence hall. In our apartments that are apartment-style living, I think it is very easy. In some of our smaller residence halls or traditional residence halls where the rooms might be smaller, that might be more difficult. And one of the things that we're looking at is if we have to, you know, maintain social distance, do we reduce the number of people that we would allow in a room? And the answer to that obviously is yes. And then the dining component would have to be, you know, there would be no sort of communal dining. We would have to do a lot of grab and go and delivery in terms of meal services. And I know that our Vice President for Student Development is beginning to have those conversations with food service now in terms of our scenario planning.
But what about the students who may not be able to thrive in the online environment and had hoped that a public university like William Patterson was just the answer to help them socially as well as in learning? The school's president, Richard Heldobler, says those young people need to hang in there.
The odds against you if you stop out of completing your degree significantly reduce. That's what you should be focused on. And I hope that they remain focused on that, especially for the population of students that we serve that are from the lower economic quartile, that come from the lower end of net worth in New Jersey. We know that the baccalaureate degree is the great equalizer. And if we're really going to change the social fabric of the state, and deal with the income inequality in the state, the only way to do that is to put more bachelor's degrees into the hands of that population, which is exactly the population that we serve. So my message to them is, yes, it will be different, but your life will be immensely different if you don't complete.
You're talking about people whose families might not have a lot of money. Can they find a better deal? Can they wait a year? Can they go to a community college? Can they get a job rather than having a virtual experience?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on what you want, right? There are students who prefer the virtual experience. When you look at like Thomas Edison University in New Jersey, which really specializes in a virtual learning environment, there are students who gravitate toward that. Working adults tend to gravitate toward a virtual online environment. But I would say that, you know, if we're told that we can't do a face-to-face experience, I'm pretty sure community colleges or county colleges would be as well. So it's not like we're going to be virtual and someone else is going to be face-to-face. I think everybody will wait, you know, from the guidance of the state and follow accordingly. But what I would, again, what I would say to students is don't let the progress towards your degree, stop just because it's a virtual environment. It may not be preferred, but it will get you one step closer to the degree. And if you take a gap year, the odds of you completing are less than 15%.
Fairleigh Dickinson has grown into the largest private university in New Jersey, with over 11,000 students spread across two campuses in northern New Jersey. We spoke to Christopher Capuano, the school's president, about how he sees the fall playing out.
The scenario that we're working most on is a scenario that allows us to return to campus. We anticipate that there will be many restrictions in place, like physical distancing, wearing masks, having to test students, faculty, and staff regularly, and also having to isolate anyone that tests positive, and that may require sending folks home for a period of 14 days or more if, in fact, they test positive, or if we can, isolating them on campus. So we're planning for all of this. I think the biggest challenge, Tim, will be the testing, because you hear every day that the states are struggling to reopen across the country. And what they're struggling most with is the resources to conduct testing. I think without being able to do that, and this is going to be true for colleges as well, it's going to be very difficult to reopen if we can't test and if we can't do contact tracing. That is our plan right now. I made an announcement to the community last week that it was our intention to reopen in the fall, albeit on a limited basis with restrictions in place. Those restrictions might even include fewer students in dormitories. In fact, we're planning for a scenario that may only allow us to have one student per dorm room. That's not ideal for us. We would like to have the dorms at full capacity, but we understand that the governor and the public health officials will tell us what we can and can't do. If we have to physical distance 6 feet or more, then it's hard to imagine you could have more than one student in a dormitory room, because those rooms are relatively small, and you would not be able to ensure that students in the same dorm room could be 6 feet apart at all times, especially if they're sharing a bathroom, as they would in many cases. So those are the three scenarios we're looking at. Back without any restrictions, back with restrictions, probably with a hybrid blended model, which would require us to do some online instruction so that we can minimize the people that are on campus at any given time, but have all students coming to campus on a schedule so that they could experience what they hope to experience, which is to be on a college campus and to interact with people face-to-face, although 6 feet away.
With regard to testing, do you have any good information or good insight or advice from health experts as to how often you may have to test either students or faculty?
So we're not certain yet how often. In fact, we would look to public health officials to tell us how often we should be testing. But my sense now is that we're going to have to test folks fairly regularly. I would think at least one or two times a week, if not more. And certainly if we believe that someone may have been exposed to the virus, then we would have to test on a on an as needed basis. The difficulty with a college campus, as you know, is people come and go, including faculty and staff and students who are commuting. So you have no way of knowing when people leave the campus who they're interacting with and who, you know, might have contracted the virus without testing. So you have to test regularly in order to make those determinations. And my sense is it sounds excessive to think that we would have to test every day, but ideally that would, I think, be a good practice to test every day. It may not be practical, but at this point, I think at least a couple of times each week would be good, because if people are practicing physical distancing and they're wearing masks, even though someone might be positive, test positive for the virus or have the virus, I should say, we're minimizing the spread of the virus by enforcing these restrictions, namely physical distancing and the wearing of masks. So if you can get the community to engage in those behaviors, I think you can probably get away with testing one or two times a week. But again, testing everyone to be sure.
The issue of residential students, you brought up dorm rooms. Obviously, there would probably be significant cleaning in shared spaces like bathrooms. You might even have to close a lounge. You might say you're restricted to your room when you're not when you're within the dorm scenario. You know, how do you cleaning probably is as big an issue as anything.
Absolutely. So we're going to have to clean on a very frequent basis, the dormitories especially. We haven't worked out all the protocols yet for the dormitory space, but even if we have limited students in the dorms, we're going to have to actually create schedules when students can use certain spaces and make sure that we're doing cleaning in between. So we have actually created, as most institutions, task forces to consider all of these scenarios and to come up with the protocols, because our number one priority is to ensure the safety and well-being of our students, faculty, and staff. It's not just students, it's also faculty. So you can imagine we have faculty who are, you know, of an age that they're considered to be vulnerable, and they may have predisposing illnesses that make them even more vulnerable. Some of these faculty, in fact, have expressed a concern to us about returning to campus too soon and interacting with you know, younger individual students who may not be sick, who may be asymptomatic, but may be carrying the virus. So we're even now building into our planning some flexibility for faculty who might feel vulnerable to minimize the amount of time that they spend on campuses, to do more in a hybrid model, to do more online than in person. So all of these are being considered. Absolutely, we're going to have to do cleaning of our spaces on a regular basis. Classrooms, our common areas like dining halls and common spaces within dormitories, and have good protocols in place. Again, if we can manage the physical distancing and we can get everyone to understand that it's vitally important to wear masks and even to wear gloves if they feel comfortable doing that, then I think we can reduce the amount of testing that we'll have to do, which will still have to be fairly regular. So these are all, you're hearing it, these are all going to be good practices for all of us to be engaging in.
Like William Patterson, Fairleigh Dickinson University expects to have much more interest from prospective students within the state who are just not comfortable about going away from home in the current climate. FDU's Chris Capuano.
Yeah, this is a very good point, Tim, and it's something we've been thinking a lot about. So the short answer is yes, we do, for the simple reason that that we anticipate many students and families will be uncomfortable about going back to school if the school is far away out of state, for fear of the unknown, and they'll look at least in the short run maybe to stay at home where they're going to feel more comfortable, and perhaps not even living on campus, simply commuting, which they may see as a better or safer option. The truth is, if you're going to go somewhere and live in a dormitory, then your risk, whether you're in Michigan or New Jersey, is probably going to be relatively similar. Although if you're at a larger university and there are more students, and therefore it's more difficult to practice some of the things we've been talking about, then perhaps that poses greater risk. So New Jersey, by the way, Tim, is one of the top net exporters of students going to college. And what that means is more students leave the state to go to college than come into the state to go to college. And we do expect to see, and we're not the only institution, others in New Jersey. In fact, the publics have launched a campaign urging students to consider them if, in fact, they're uncomfortable about returning to the schools that they were studying at this past spring. So we do expect to see that, I think, across the state. More students, especially since so many leave, staying home for safety reasons to minimize risk. And we hope that Fairleigh in northern New Jersey would be a very good option for them for the reasons you've stated, because we are a comprehensive university. We have over 100 degree programs at the undergraduate and graduate level. So we have many options for students, and many of our programs are highly ranked and have very good outcomes in terms of job prospects and things of that nature.
I would have to suspect that if there's not a task force, there certainly is an interest in learning a little bit about any of the hiccups of remote learning, so that when a full semester comes back up, we can do it bigger and better. Has there been much to learn about being good at remote teaching?
Very much so. In fact, most of us were forced to move to online learning, as you know, and very quickly. In fact, all of the faculty were. And we've been doing surveys of students throughout the spring term, the latter half of the spring term, to determine the pros and cons from their perspective. And we're taking that information actually to use in improving the instruction that we would be delivering online in the fall, either fully, if that's the path we're forced to take, or we hope in a hybrid model. And our provost actually has created a task force, which includes many faculty, actually to look at online instruction and to make it more robust and more in the way of being uniform across courses. So a lot of time will be spent this summer making our online learning platforms much, much stronger, even though they were strong to begin with, but we want to make them more uniform in terms of practice across the entire faculty.
Fairleigh Dickinson will hold a virtual graduation on Monday, the 18th of May. But Dr. Capuano is confident the school will actually have an in-person ceremony for the class of 2020 sometime later this summer. Both university presidents are hard at work, committed to giving incoming students the best way forward, they say, in this time of crisis. Both schools will have elements of study this fall that will focus on public service to help their communities. And no, neither school has any plans to reduce the cost of their education. Their hard costs, if anything, have gone up. That's 880 In Depth. Thank you for listening. Thank you to reporter Peter Haskell for his hard work on this podcast every week. And congratulations to all of the 2020 graduates from high school and from college, including my daughter, who is getting her degree from Loyola University in Maryland this weekend. These are remarkable times, and to the graduates, living through remarkable times will make you a remarkable person. I'm Tim Shelton. Have a good week.
Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.